I'm Frank Van. Frank Van? Jeez. Good morning. I'm Frank Vaughn. It is May the 4th, 2026. May the force be with you. May the 4th be with you. You're going to need something as time moves forward, some kind of grace. It's been a few days since I last made a video. I don't want anybody to worry about me too much, but the last video received such a muted viewership that I thought, hey, I'm going to take the rest of Thursday off and I'm going to take Friday off too. Tried to go to town Thursday to mail my taxes, found out that my road was completely flooded out. I couldn't actually exit the place where I live. And then as time went forward, Friday, I was outside playing in the mud. I managed to give myself quite the lower body injury, which I am working on recovering from, which triggered a bit of an existential crisis that over the last 14, 15 months that I've been making videos again and putting out content, it hasn't been very good for my physicality. And although on Twitter in my bio, it says practice delayed gratification, just says the words delayed gratification, I have not been practicing that as it comes to my physicality. So I'm going to fix that. I'm going to put some attention on that because, man, injuries hurt. But I want to take accountability starting out today that I was wrong in my last video. I wish I was wronger, if that's a word. I said that the shooting would start over the weekend and the bombs would start falling over the weekend. I was wrong about that. Waited till Monday morning. And there are some interesting dimensions that I think we should explore and are worth exploring when it comes to this new phase of hostility. I'm actually going to begin in the wrong spot. This is the price of Brent crude oil. And some people have said, it's not even as high as it was in the past, Frank. The market's telling you you're wrong. They're pricing in that Trump is the master strategist and his victory is impending. I think it's a sign of the disconnect of the oil markets from reality. Of course, the all-time high was July 2008 at $147.5 per barrel. So if you account for inflation, that's much higher than it is today. And it also went to $139 in March 2022 following the outbreak of the Russia-Ukraine conflict before it calmed down. The situation in the Middle East is much worse than the conditions that existed in July of 2008, which was a speculative bubble. There was a commodity boom going on. And the Russia-Ukraine war and the impact that would actually have on global oil markets. The market isn't pricing in how dire this situation is. And you could say the markets, if I'm going up against the markets, then I must be wrong. I keep saying over and over again that the effects, the lag, the inbuilt deficits because of what's not coming out of the Persian Gulf are bills that we will pay down the road. There's a lot of market fakery that is going on right now to keep the illusion that things aren't as bad as they are. But physical reality will catch up. Now, before we get to what's actually happening this morning, I just want to go over what's happened over the weekend. The first thing is, so we did the 24-48-hour war. Happy two-month anniversary, by the way. It went by in the absence. I think it was the first, we could say, or maybe the third, depending on how you want to score it. We're 2 months into the 24 to 48 hour war called Epic Fury, which lasted 6 or 7 weeks. The story is the ceasefire ended it, so it's over. That's what Trump claims. That's what Hegseth claims, is that because they did the ceasefire, they closed the chapter, they closed the book on Operation Epic Fury so they can ignore the War Powers Act. Now, if you read the War Powers Act, you would know that that is some very clever narration to justify ignoring a law that is on the books to stop this very activity that's going on right now. This is the ongoing theme that I talked about in videos over all of 2025 was that the rule of law was leaving the world, that international law was breaking down, the rule of law in Canada was breaking down, and the rule of law in the United States was breaking down, and the law of the jungle and the law of who's in control and who has the control of power and the arms of power, that would be a more powerful law. And I didn't restrict that observation to the international arena or the Canadian arena. That was talking about the United States too. And it was a matter of how is the Trump administration going to use this new understanding of the breakdown of the rule of law? Well, this storytelling. Now we have, the story is, a humanitarian mission called Project Freedom. which is a brand new military intervention, and thus it gets a new 60 days. That's exactly what the Trump administration is doing. Now, it's twofold, because they said they were going to do a humanitarian mission to escort stranded tankers that are running out of food in the Gulf. They're going to use naval assets to do it. Now, of course, the Iranians said, if you do this, we're going to start blowing stuff up. And they made good on that this morning. We'll get into that. But that's the other dimension of it, that you create this really loose, I don't know how people are buying this anymore. Like, I don't even know why Trump is even bothering to spin the story. The idea is, we're going to do a humanitarian mission. If the Iranians hit us, they're the bad guys. That's the story. That's how they want to craft it. They want to create a self-defense justification to continue a new operation, which is basically the same operation. It's still epic fury or epic failure. And it is a failure. Because the Strait is still in Iran's control, and you're going to see that they expanded the zone of control today in effect. And one last thing before we get to the news of the morning. Gregor Gregarious, a follower of mine, says, you're starting to sound very anti-American. I'm just consistent. I have always been very pro-Republic and anti-Empire, and I haven't deviated from that. In 2016, and indeed 2015, when Trump was first running for the election, I said, you were not picking a candidate in spite of the rhetoric, whether it was Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or Joe Biden and Donald Trump. You weren't picking candidates. You weren't picking presidents to save the American empire. You were picking who was going to be in charge to oversee its deconstruction and its shrinking down. There are so many false and fake narratives out there. This is the only narrative. The United States and its military bases ring the entire world. And that day has been ending slowly since 2001, really, especially since 2003, and at an accelerated rate since the 2010s began. And in the 2020s, the decline, unfortunately, is being resisted kinetically. America is not in Iran to beat the British exclusively, to beat the Europeans exclusively. They are there to enforce their imperium, which they have enjoyed for a long time. And they will not be successful. They cannot be successful. And I knew this in 2016 when I supported Trump running for president because he was saying all the right things. Back then, and indeed in 2020, and even in 2024, it did seem that the president still understood the necessity of deconstructing the empire in an orderly fashion and focusing on Fortress North America, where we could still all get rich in a very much more concentrated effort that made sense geopolitically, that made sense strategically, that made sense in terms of the continent that we all share. So I've never been pro-empire. Now, today, the United Arab Emirates says it intercepted Iranian missiles. Let's just refresh the screen. Gulf states still reluctant to retaliate to Iran. UAE says reserves right to respond to Iranian attacks. Timing not appropriate to meet with Netanyahu, says Lebanon's Ayoun. Iran reacting to U.S. operation by targeting Gulf energy infrastructure. So the Iranians are firing. They move first. And that's the other dimension of what Trump was trying to do with this humanitarian mission. It's not just that trying to make them fire first, but I think there was an element of trying to call their bluff. If they really had no technical capacity to defend the Strait of Hormuz, or they had no real appetite for war, he was trying to call their bluff. Well, they're not bluffing. They haven't been bluffing this entire time. And for all the damage, 14,000 structures damaged, it's not enough to shake a regime. In a nation of that size, in that much control, with 90 million civilians and people in the population. Like, Iran just can't be defeated that way. You need a million men to go in and do a lot of dying and a lot of shooting if you really want to take them down. I've seen satellite imagery. It's probably lost in one of my tabs, but I'll just describe it. From a private satellite company that isn't Planet Labs, that isn't agreeing to not share satellite data, so you can't see how bad the damage is in the Middle East. And simply, they released imagery showing a flotilla of Iranian attack boats. And people will say, oh, they're drone boats or they're little boats. They've got nothing on our aircraft carriers or our missile destroyers. Does anybody remember Star Wars, the first movie? And how you have this great big Death Star, big powerful thing that could blow up planets. And they had these little tiny ships that went in there and blew them up. It's the same principle. You have these great, big, expensive ships that require incredible logistics chains to maintain their operational capacity in the region. And then you got these little tiny cheap speedboats, some of them automated without even men on them, with torpedoes mounted on them, that are a successful foil that can take out tankers and indeed can harass American military assets, naval assets. That's why those naval assets are not in the Persian Gulf. They don't go in because they will get destroyed, because the Iranians maintain an effective naval deterrent. I don't know how this isn't understood at this point. So this morning, not only is Iran striking back, the headline on screen is Reuters, from Reuters, UAE's Fujairah says fire breaks out at petroleum complex after Iranian drone attack. I don't know if the associated picture is just a stock photo from an old strike, but I do want to show you where Fujairah actually is. This is on screen is a Google Earth. And if we zoom in, we can see Fujairah is here. This is a port facility that has a pipeline running to it. And during the course of this blockade, ships were able to enter and leave and load up and unload cargo at Al Fujairah. Now, we have a map that the Iranians published. You can make fun of it because it looks like it was taken out of a textbook from the 1980s, or you can just take what they're saying seriously. And those yellow lines are what they say nobody can pass without their permission. And you may note that one yellow line, if you could see it, extends past Fujairah. What I really want people to understand is that Iran controls the escalation ladder. I've said this before. So it's easy for them to escalate. It's easy for them to hit new targets. It's easy for them to issue edicts and say, we have a greater zone of control. Looking on the Al Jazeera website, we have, this is just 3 minutes ago, IRGC unveils new map as Iran asserts right to target U.S. ships. You heard it from me before you heard it from them. They've expanded their zone of control. U.S. CENTCOM commander strongly advises Iran to steer clear of U.S. assets. They don't care. They are under attack. From their perspective, they are fighting an existential conflict. They will not relinquish the Strait of Hormuz at any price. You'll have to kill them all. That's basically where Iran is. And it's a rock and a hard place situation because Iran controls the escalation ladder. The United States is at the end of a very expensive logistics chain. They don't have enough troops on the ground to effect change in Iran if they decided to do a ground invasion. Sure, they can bomb more and they can do more of that. But that hasn't brought them to their knees yet. They can bomb all the bridges. They can bomb all the power plants. And Iran can do the same thing in kind. The Gulf will never recover. Millions of people will need to be evacuated because they won't have water. Even the Israelis, their desalinization operations, which they have to maintain to keep everybody in drinking water, are concentrated in a very narrow geography and can be easily hit. Maybe not on the first day, because over the last several weeks, the Americans and the Israelis have likely beefed up their defenses with their most advanced, most expensive munitions. But give it another couple weeks, those will be expended too, and then it'll just be a free-for-all as Iran keeps pumping out all of the cheap stuff. Now, another thing is, this vaunted U.S. military with its big, expensive ships and big, expensive planes. The history of warfare is replete with empires falling apart. It's not even warfare. It's the history of the human race. A fighting method is developed. Like the Greek phalanx was the most dominant military formation on the planet or in the known world for the longest time, until it was replaced by something superior. Roman legions were replaced by something superior. Actually, Roman legions rotted from the inside out, because there weren't enough Roman citizens to fill them, and so they had these multi-ethnic barbarian hordes, something like what Canada is doing right now. I've seen a story the other day about how there was all these foreign hires in the officer corps, and it descended into ethnic unrest within the military. A report came out, I believe it was Juno News, picked it up right here. Yeah. Exclusive CAF training platoon with 83% non-citizens devolved into ethnic infighting. An explosive internal CAF report reveals a Quebec officer platoon dominated by non-citizens descended into ethnic infighting, a lack of respect for women, peers, and abysmal graduation rates. because you actually need, if not a common ethnicity, you need a common culture, a common identity, a common reason for uniting around a fighting force. This is what undermined Rome, the greatest empire on earth. I've heard Trump say that so many times about the United States. We are the greatest nation. We are the greatest fighting force that the world has ever seen. But every single greatest fighting force that's ever existed in the history of mankind has succumbed, and generally it's succumbed because of the efforts of smaller nations or backwards ethnic people being brought in to beef up the legions. And there's a new style of warfare that's been developed in Russia and Ukraine and in Iran and been embraced by the Chinese called drone warfare. The United States will catch up, I'm sure of it, but they're way behind right now in terms of dealing with this, where the great, big, expensive assets are nothing but sitting targets waiting to be hit by cheap countermeasures. You would have thought this lesson would have been learned in Afghanistan, where a bunch of illiterate herdsmen with shoulder-mounted RPGs and ancient AK-47s were able to defeat the U.S. military. That's what happened. The Taliban runs Afghanistan. I've heard people say that it wasn't a defeat. It was a strategic redeployment. The war was not won. It was an ignominious defeat. And the people who say that it wasn't a defeat, that they're Trump supporters, trying to pretzel logic this thing together. Trump himself campaigned on it being an ignominious defeat. Lambasted Joe Biden for the way that he handled it. I don't know how we... Like, how is it cults of personality and political necessity can make otherwise honest people lie to themselves and try to lie to everybody else and then get really angry when you don't accept their story? Now, I'm going to keep this one short because there was absolutely no interest, or I shouldn't say there was no interest, but there was much reduced interest in my last video. So we'll see how this one does. But to summarize where I think we're at is the United States and the Trump administration has a big problem. They can't get out of this war without leaving a lot on the table, and they can't do that politically, because as much as I think the Trump ship is going to sink come November, there's no getting out of this now. Like, I think it's over, guys. I mean, I don't know what the Democrats would have to do. The independents, every poll, it shows Trump is in the tank. He's lost the independents. We're not looking at fake polls. We're looking at the real polls. There's a lot of the MAGA base that doesn't want to admit how damaging this is politically. You might not like the Democrats. You may think they're crazy. I've said enough bad things about where the left is in Canada and the United States on this channel, and none of that changes. It doesn't change the fact that as the months unfold, as farm yields are down, as costs increase, as the oil shock hits. Folks, the oil shock has not hit yet. The damage and the price damage is in the future somewhere. And we're not talking about $150 a barrel. We're talking $200, maybe $300 a barrel, maybe even higher as this thing unfolds. It all depends on what happens and where the damage is cut off. The damage is already baked in. Where the damage cutoff is will determine how much damage we have to face down the road somewhere. For political reasons, Trump is trying to cling to a win, because if he wins, maybe he can spin that up to the American public. He can juice it up and somehow save the Republican Party. I'm sure that's what his thinking is. If the war continues and the Americans respond with further escalation, further bombing, and they continue, it's even more damage. It won't change anything because there's not enough force structure available to do anything physically with Iran that would dislodge the regime, and the destruction will be massive. Like the end of the Gulf region, I don't think is an exaggeration. And then there's the third option, which I think is the one that has been played with over the last couple of weeks, which is the Americans' attempt to keep the Strait of Hormuz closed, even though it's a leaky closure. The blockade is ineffective because Iranian crude is making it to market, not at the pace that the Iranians would like, but the blockade is leaky. Maintain the blockade for as long as it takes to economically destroy Iran and bring the regime down. The thing is that's it's a method of combat. It's a strategy that causes you damage as well as your opponent. It might cause the Iranians more damage, but they are used to being damaged. And in the meantime, they're opening up land routes with their allies in Pakistan. Over the last couple weeks, they have secured the backing of the Russians and the Chinese. They will adapt. They will adapt land routes. They will figure out how to get their product to market, and they will survive because they've been surviving for decades. Whether you love them or hate them, it doesn't matter. They're survivors with a largely dominant faith that embraces the concept of martyrdom, not just random suicide, but this idea. I probably shouldn't have used that word. Let's see what the algorithm does with that. Not embracing self-deletion for vanity's sake, but accepting a fate. They've been suffering for a long time. That approach was doomed to fail. The Americans cannot just keep the Strait of Hormuz blockaded because it does a lot of damage to the entire world. So there's basically three choices. Trump takes the loss, which his ego can't allow and his politics can't allow. They escalate, which won't lead anywhere good. It'll just lead to more bad results. Or they try to maintain the blockade on the Strait, which we're past that now because the Iranians are shooting again. They try to maintain the blockade on the Strait, and that just causes ever more damage. So I'm going to leave it there. We're going to watch events unfold over the next 24 or 48 hours. We'll see where this all goes. And I'll see you in the next one.